I think we do have a very strong populist, progressive, leftist current to what we do in this band. We're just not overt about it.
It's very important that we collectively agree that we're on the same page and that we say we won't go support this company there because they've done this over there.
We're providing the soundtrack to the revolution. The
point is that we're very aligned with our community and we stay aware of what's happening around us.
One of the biggest changes happened after 9/11. You know, because before that, we would do the subway parties, and we just cram on, and, like, the car was, like, filled with people partying, rocking the subway, you know, drinking and smoking on the subway. And now, you know, the same thing with the parks, and it's not only affecting us, but affecting, you know, so many people in the city.
The machine of change really started with Giuliani's mayorship and how he really tried to harness what maybe his class of people or his design of people expected out of New York. And they tried to clean up the streets. And we're kind of that part of New York that was the part of the streets that didn't want to be cleaned up because we didn't feel like we were doing wrong. And we felt like we were really trying to bring something beautiful to the people.
Our second CD was called On the Waterfront, and that was named after a rehearsal space that we had on the waterfront, which was the place that where we really came together, where we used to go Sundays, and we used to play and fight and drink and smoke and play soccer and play music, and we barbecued and we'd stay there all day with the skate. There was skateboard punks and homeless guys, and everybody was down there, and it was great, and it was a beautiful time for the band, and people would come down and watch us, and we just have this freedom all day long. And then they closed that lot off to us after a few years, and now it's like paved over. There's not a single tree down there. There's not an ounce of shade. We can't go down there. And we're having a really hard time finding open space where we can just rehearse on Sundays. It's not welcoming for us in the city. Like, coming to a park, we might get hassled. We might get booted. And we really shouldn't be, but it's a big problem for us. There's a rule with the parks where if you have a gathering of more than 20 people, you're supposed to have a permit. And we're oftentimes more than 20 people. Why can't we as a community group just go and rehearse in a park on Sunday? Why can't we do that? We can't, you know, because we're more than like 20 people sometimes, and we're making noise, and some police officer takes it upon themselves to be like, you can't play here, you're disturbing people. We were at the marathon, and we were playing, and the cops tried to make us move into another precinct because they didn't want to deal with us. They thought we were going to do something, and we weren't, but Norman Siegel happened to be there, and he was with a friend of ours, and our friend brought him over, and he stood toe-to-toe with the police and told them that they can't make us move, and we weren't so loud. They tried to say we were too loud, we were this, we were that, and this is the reason we had to move, but in fact, we weren't, and he represented us right there on the street, and we were allowed to stay where we were, and we played, and it was good to have somebody like that backing us up, because oftentimes people just hassle us, and we just oftentimes move along because we just want to play music, you know. We don't want to go fight with the cops just every time we want
to
play.
We used to be able to get amazing space in William Williamsburg where you could have a group of artists perform in a large warehouse, and none of these are available anymore. You have to get further and further and further out, and with the gentrification and everything else comes people who are paying exorbitant rents, and these people somehow or another don't want, you know, to have the people who are the artists who originally started there. So when we go to have big events now, we can't find space.
A lot of us lived in Williamsburg in the Lower East Side, and a lot of us have had to move out because the rents are just too high, and the atmosphere is also not as welcoming as it used to be.
We've got a different attitude now towards what artists and creativity is, and towards us coming and making a community and using the warehouses for space for people like us that have now turned into lofts for 3 and 4 kids renting at $3,000 a month. That's how New York's changed.
Towns in France will have like their own marching band, but in the States that's just not happening, but it's starting to evolve, and it's just a really important part of life to have a brass band in your town that can show up at your picnic and your party and your parade and your protest and your vineyard. And they know how to live in Europe, and we're a little behind here in the States.
We do have the Honk Fest, which has begun to become an exposition of these bands that exist in the United States. And there's the Honk Fest, which has existed now for 2 years in Boston. It's about to see its third year. And it's a sort of melting pot of bands from the West Coast and the North Coast and the South Coast and the East Coast. Some affiliates of that festival just started a festival this past year in the Seattle area. And we went and represented the East Coast in this year's Honk Festival in Seattle, and it's been an amazing conglomeration of workshops, and you really see the power and the energy in the streets of this country.
You know, you meet all these people that, like, yeah, they were in a march band for 8 years, and then they became an accountant, or they opened up a whatever store, and then, like, they're like, oh, yeah, I play trumpet, and you're like, wow, I never knew that, and then all of a sudden they have an outlet again.
Going to Europe with the Hungry March Band has opened up a whole new world for the European bands, too. We've brought over 4 bands from Europe mm-hmm. in the last 3 years. The first band was this band from Lyon called Le Pistole, and they were the first band they were like, yeah, we're coming to New York. We don't care if we make money. We don't care. So they came over. I helped get them a lot of shows. And being in Europe, though, they have funding for these kind of events where we don't have that kind of funding for this mm-hmm. kind of sort of thing. And when the first band came over, Le Pistole, we were like, oh my God, how are we going to repay all their, you know, efforts to feed us and get us drunk every day? And like, how are we going to do this? We don't have funding. But we did it. We did it. We pulled our resources together, found them shows, had a big dinner at my house. We had 40 people sit down dinner in my house. It was incredible.
We put out 4 CDs by ourselves, our own label. All the tours, all the CDs, we're not on a label. We do this all ourselves. We're totally DIY. If you want one of our CDs, you can get it at a show. We've got 4 CDs. One is currently available, which is all, but one song is original composition, and CD Baby is the way you can order it online. Our website is www.hungrymarchband.com.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to The Hungry March Band. I'm Sebastian Eisler of The Hungry March Band, a community marching band based in New York City. Production assistance came from David Clayman, Greta Cohn, Doug George, and Ursula Rudenberg. Music you've heard included Bag Search, Blasted, Happy Time, a.k.a. The Clam, Gdesibre, and Push It. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at Ursula, U-R-S-U-L-A, at Pacifica.org. That's U-R-S-U-L-A, at Pacifica.org. I'm Sebastian Eisler. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
It's the 420.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM, Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the August 21st, 2008 show. Stay tuned.
Community, of course, that were contemporary with them, as I said, and as Tony's mentioned, were the Diggers. Leon Russellson wrote Abbey Is the Cop, and he also wrote this next song, which we first recorded in 1975. And it's sort of gone around the world, really, this song. And I remember doing it at a concert, and a lot of Billy Bragg people in the audience, a lot of Billy Bragg fans in the audience. And Billy and I were sort of doing this concert in Sheffield. And it's very strange doing it. I mean, all my people who came to hear me, this is, we're going back 1982, all sat at the back very quietly and very respectable and sort of clapped nicely and said, here, here, at the right places. But his lot all stood down the front and they were doing this, banging their head, which is all very well. But when they banged their head in a different time that I was singing in, it was a bit of a problem. It didn't seem to matter until I got to this song. And then they all banged their head in time. And that's really why Billy said, I want to do that song. And he did. This song was translated into, has been translated into many different languages. It appeared once, it was performed once, played once, during a program on coffee bean picking in Nicaragua. And the people of Nicaragua in the fields were singing this song in Spanish. And at the end of the program, the BBC said, this song that you heard was the traditional anthem for coffee bean picking in Nicaragua. And Liam was outraged, and so he rang the BBC and said, I wrote that song. He said, no, I'm sorry, we have it on authority that this is an anthem of coffee bean picking in Nicaragua, traditional. So he said, I wrote the song. So, and then he said to me afterwards, the extent to which people will go, the BBC will go to avoid paying copyrights, outrageous. So if you know the song, just join in. Each in your own key. It's called A Harmony in Folk Festivals. In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the land in common and to make the waste ground grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. Sin of property, we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder, they took the land. Now everywhere, the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with a heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor folks starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the Lord. Still we are free, though we are poor. You diggers all, stand up for glory, stand up now. From the men of property, the orders came. They sent their hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, set down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace. The orders came to cut them down. Sing that with me. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace. The orders came to cut them down. We come in peace. The orders came to cut them down.
And that was from The Writing on the Wall. It was called The World Turned Upside Down by Roy Bailey. And Tony Benn also does other songs on this disc. You're tuned to Free Radio, as mentioned before, or Freak Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Call-in number here, in case you get an inclination to call in, is 831-427-3772. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. And we started a little late because the previous show, Sprouts, apparently got put on late, but I think it was worth listening to. Interesting stuff. From the New York City group and what's going on there, which... trying to find the actual website because I want to repeat it, but I don't have it here handy. We do have a caller, though. Let's see what the caller wants. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello? Can you hear me? Don't know. Let's try this. It looks like they hung up. Caller, if you didn't hang up and you got cut off, my apologies. Try again, 427-3772. Maybe we have a problem with connections. Looks like connections are okay. So, got a bunch of street interviews to begin with today. It's kind of catching up for lost time because a lot of the stuff is piled up on me. And... I want to get through it, but gosh, I hope we can actually hear this person. Hello there, can you hear me? I can hear you, but let me see if I can get you on the air here. Hang on. Are you there? Hello? Now that is a problem because I can't hear you. Still there? Yeah, could you hear me when I was talking to you a moment ago? Oh, Jesus, I'm sorry. You know, why don't you try calling in on the other line? That may be better. Someone's muddled with the equipment here while I've been out. And the other number is 469-3119, or of course you're welcome to come into the studio, as you know. Yeah, we have on the line, for all you listeners out there who wonder who I'm talking to, we have city council candidate and potential marijuana felon, or actually it's infractioner, Craig Canada. I guess it might be a misdemeanor, but we'll see. 3119, 469-3119. Thanks. And we'll see if we can get Craig on the other line, though there's definitely a problem with the phone, and I am not sure what it is. So, it seems to be... I don't know what the heck is going on. Anyway, let's hope that we can get some action on that situation. While I'm waiting for that call, which actually should be coming in momentarily... let's drop back a few weeks to hear some voices from the street.
A woman who prefers to remain anonymous, that she got a citation yesterday for panhandling out of the boardwalk, the wharf thereabouts.
Yep.
And this was, what were you doing at the time? You were just sitting on a bench?
I was just sitting on the bench with a sign.
And what did the sign say?
Diabetic, anything helps.
Are you diabetic?
Yes.
Does anything help?
Yes.
But not a ticket. That didn't help.
No.
And this is a lone cop or a cop with a companion?
Two bicycle cops.
And what did the officer say to you?
He told me that he was going to give me a ticket, and I asked him what for. He said panhandling on a bench. I was like, okay, I didn't know I couldn't do this. And he's like, well, it's apparently your job. You guys consider this your job, so you should know the status of your job and what you can and cannot do. So here's your ticket.
What did his companion say? Anything?
Nothing.
And what did you say back?
Nothing. I just signed the ticket and was like, whatever.
And is there a court date on the ticket, or say within 30 days you got to go?
It says that within 30 days I have to go pay it.
And we'll pause briefly to see if we can actually get a live person on the line. Are you there, caller?
Can you hear me now?
Hey, we actually can hear you, or at least I can hear you in the studio, and that's hopefully also going out on the air.
A good sign.
Hey there.
Yeah, let me just check.
We'll pause briefly to see if we can actually get a live person on the line. Are you there, caller?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you. Then turn down that radio so we can actually not confuse you and other people while talking to you. So, Craig, you're a city councilman now. Not quite.
I'm on the ballot. Yeah, I'm not. I will be most surprised if I should win, but I would certainly not turn down the job if I should get it. But yeah, I'm calling. I guess you kind of wanted to talk to me last week, and I was found guilty of peeing, and I'm hoping that I can. And so I was sentenced to 11 hours community service, and they're going to charge me $35 for that. So I'm hoping that I can. Run for city council to pay my debt to the community for peeing next to Lulu's in that hole when I woke up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the day before that, on Monday of, I guess that was 10 days ago, the week before last, I was also, appeared, for the second time to be arraigned on charges, possession of concentrated marijuana, which I'm told sprang from a phone call to the police that someone was smoking marijuana behind the museum. But the point is that I don't think I've spoken on the radio about this anyway. So I appeared, and for the second time, the DA said that they were still reviewing the case and had not decided whether or not to file charges or not. They actually told me that before the judge came in, and I was the first person they dealt with. I guess they were trying to show consideration to me, but it made me very angry because, at first the judge wouldn't allow me to speak. I wanted to know how many times and how long they could continue to call me in there for arraignment without doing anything, and how long they could keep my property, that concentrated cannabis, my medicine, without charging me with a crime or without giving it back to me. And so I finally got to ask that question, and the judge said the statute of limitations is 1 year. And so I managed to...
Are you being charged with anything, actually? I mean, have you...
I have not been charged, Robert. That's the point. That's
have you,
what I'm trying to...
Have you gotten...
To. I have not been charged.
Craig, have you gotten a police report yet?
No.
Okay, and you've requested it, but it hasn't been provided, or...
How do I get the police report, Robert? From the lawyer?
Well, no, you requested it. Well, you can try and get it from the lawyer, but you can also get it from the court. That's the usual way. You know, if you're...
You mean from the judge? What do you mean by from the court?
Well, you get it from the DA, but the judge tells the DA to give it to you because, you know, you're there. Now, the problem could be...
Well, I'm not a lawyer, Robert. That's...
Craig, take a deep breath. You know, I mean, here's the situation. This is the best information I have, is that when you go in on a charge, particularly a misdemeanor charge, this happened to Donna Dice, you don't even have to be arraigned. You don't even have to be arraigned. They can delay the arraignment. But
that's what they're doing with me.
But they have to give you the police report, or at least they did in the case of Donna Dice. But of course, that may be because she had this high-powered lawyer, Ben Rice, with her, and that you know, it certainly might have made some difference in the judge's eyes. But on the other hand, it sounds like you weren't in there for an arraignment. And again, I'd like to, you know, I'm interested in these cases, and I do bring them up on the air. And I'm interested also not just in how they impact you as an individual, but how they impact other people. And I had the notion that you were to some extent concerned about the city council race because you felt you weren't just making a personal plea for justice for yourself, but also more broadly a plea for justice for a broader community of people who may be suffering under the same kinds of problems. Is that accurate or not?
Oh, yeah, Robert. As far as running for the city council, yeah. I feel like if they're going to be making laws about homeless people, they need somebody that's been there that they have to sit there and look at while they're doing it. I think that in itself would make a difference. Mm-hmm. For them to have to sit there and look at me knowing I've been homeless when they make these laws, just that alone, but if I should, by some miracle, win office, I hope to do a whole lot more than that.
Are you, I've seen you have a platform at palmspringsbum.com, is that right?
It's .org. I did, Robert. Actually, on the Sentinel article about three more running for Santa Cruz Council, there's a whole thread there. And for several days, it showed up. This is on topics.net, but on the article in the Sentinel at the bottom, there's comments. And if you click the comments link, then there's this huge thread which showed up as the most viewed thread on the Sentinel for several days.
Yeah, I think I read some of that thread. Most of it was sort of sneering, laughing, and making fun of you. There were a couple of substantive comments. I guess my interest is what... Wait a minute. My interest is...
There is a link in that thread. There is a link to what you were speaking of. I have position
right,
papers
platform.
On my blog.
Right.
I'm putting together a platform,
right.
and there are links there to that. And that's,
yes.
You know,
and I've read
without having to go through a long.
Yeah, Craig, I've read the four or five different planks of your platform having to do with medical marijuana and rent control. In fact, I agree with them. I don't know about the pharmaceutical cleanup thing, but you know, I guess what I'm interested.
It wasn't about
what
cleanup.
I'm interested.
I mean,
let me finish.
Robert,
let me
no,
finish.
No, you're not going to do
well,
this to me. You said cleanup. And it's not about cleanup. I said testing.
All right, whatever. You know, there's some parts of your platform I don't fully understand, but the parts that I'm interested in have to do with your experience of being homeless and the criminalization poor people face. And I don't think, of course, you have a chance in hell of winning. That's not the issue for me. The real issue is whether you have a chance of confronting the politicians who will win, because there are five former mayors or council members running, I think at least four of whom are likely to win. Well, at least three of whom are likely to win three out of the four seats that are open. You can raise issues that they will not allow you to raise in any meaningful way at city council and not give you the time. What issues do you think you're going to be particularly focusing on? I know you have two forums coming up on September 3rd and September 10th, and you were not apparently invited to the SEIU forum a couple of weeks ago.
That's right. No, I was, and I received no email or nothing in the mail about it. From my blog and in my forum, in the section where I'm a candidate, I do have a calendar which has all the dates, you know, and I have these two dates on there. And I haven't really taken a look. I'm not all that familiar with these organizations. I know that one of them is concerned with a five-story garage on they're proposing at Cathcart and Cedar. And I think that's on the 3rd, but it could be on the 10th. But anyway, you know, I haven't even been to their meeting yet, but I just do not think we need a five-story garage at Cathcart and Cedar. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that. One of them is I think it would pretty much, that's a blockbuster kind of thing. It will just destroy that whole area. And actually, that's my primary reason. It's a nice open space there. But that's one of the issues that is coming up. I guess it's important to people in Santa Cruz. And so I'm opposed to the garage. And as far as homeless people, I'm opposed to the sleeping ban. And there is an issue I have about accommodation of medical marijuana patients in the social services and in the homeless services. They are banned. And there's just a lot of things I could spend a very long time about the things I think that are wrong with the system. I think this whole idea of your downtown ordinances, where that what they've basically done is downtown is a minefield. I took a picture the other day of Chris, who is being given a ticket. The charge was I have it written down here, and I actually posted a link.
That's a Cosmic.
To the code.
That's Cosmic Chris, the musician we're talking about.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. Code 54320 or something like that.
That's probably display device within
that's
10
right.
feet of a building, yeah.
Yeah,
open guitar case.
You know, I'm not sure exactly what I think the solution is, but one of the things that I'm really opposed to, just because it's wrong on moral grounds, is this idea that you have this minefield of little ordinances that everyone breaks all the time that exists so that they can get specific people that they don't like for whatever reason. I just think that's very un-American. I think it's wrong. And I don't think anyone should be required to have to know all this Byzantine. It's like they sat down and tried, you know, had a conference on how many angels could dance on the head of a pin. That's what these laws remind me of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a good slogan might be to disarm the minefield, you know, or uproot the minefield of ordinances. Many of us have been concerned about, you know, rolling back these ordinances since they were first passed in 1994 under the elder Coonerty, Neil Coonerty, when he was on the city council.
Well, things have really improved since, haven't they? I mean, what I hear over and over is people are being robbed and all the crime and all the this and all the that. And so you're going to do more of the same. That's the solution, right? I mean, it seems to me that their solution is a lot of the cause.
Well, I don't actually see much in the way of police figures actually show any increase in crime downtown, other than perhaps criminal behavior by police officers repeatedly and in a minuscule fashion toward poor people. I mean, you know, it's a downtown. We're not talking about a small village anymore. I mean, it's an urban area somewhat, and that all the problems of an urban area go with it. But likewise, all the mixed uses that are downtown. I mean, I know that Tamarack, the drummer, recently went to trial. I haven't yet gotten a report from him. I'm actually going to try to call him on the air tonight to ask him what happened in his trial in the court, in quotations, court of Commissioner Kim Basket. Never put your case in Kim Basket's court, is my advice to everybody. But he was accused of unreasonable noise for drumming on Pacific Avenue during the day. And that's because some people across the street who lived there didn't like the sound of his drum. And one of the problems, of course, is that people don't fight back against these ordinances. They're afraid of police, and, you know, they're intimidated. And, well, you know the feeling. You know how alone
well,
you
I
feel.
Well, I guess I do, Robert. In fact, I think that what's happening to me is gang stalking. You talk about these threats, and these people are talking about seeing me and, you know, here and there and letting me know that they, you know, there are people watching me all over town. I want to mention this. On the 29th now, I'm supposed to be in court. And I just came back from HP this afternoon and stopped by my lawyer's office on the way. And this case has been moved to another lawyer. Now, this case, it's kind of complicated to explain, but I was battered. I was assaulted and battered in Pizza Love. I asked for the police to be called, and they ended up arresting me. Every time I tried to tell them what happened, they told me if I didn't calm down, to calm down. They interrupted me and told me.
Right, and you had a trial on that, and there was a hung jury.
A hung jury, yeah. And
you were offered a deal, and you first thought it was a good deal, but now you're having second thoughts, right?
Well, yes, and the deal was they also had another charge, possession of marijuana, which they have no case at all on this charge. And there's a number of reasons for this that I don't want to go into now, but there's some legal points that mean that they have absolutely no case whatsoever. But what they did with me is they offered me a deal where they would not have another trial on the spitting charge, which they called battery, and they would not try me on this possession of marijuana charge, which was my medicine.
Which you have a card for, right? Your patient.
Oh, yes, and Medican had sent the card to Desert Hot Springs. Why they sent my card?
Well, let's not get into that. But continue with what's going to happen on the 29th.
So on the 29th, I am supposed to appear with the court gave me a minute order with a scribbled on it test for communicable diseases. Now, I just came back from HPHP, and I talked to a nurse there about this. And, you know, I tried to explain to him that what I want to do is I want to go in there with this test and say, you know, I have the test, but I don't want the deal. I want a trial. And we talked about it a minute. And when I said spitting, he said, oh, my God, you can't transmit anything by spitting. And I said, oh, right, Paul, I forgot about – oh, what's the first name? I forgot about that because I researched that years ago. And spit kills damn near everything.
Let me clarify for the folks listening. One of the requirements of your not being tried again was that you be tested for communicable diseases, right?
On something that happened 9 months ago, yeah.
Right, on this, where you were battered, they claim now you must be tested. I find the whole thing really questionable.
It's
Craig, I got to roll, though, pretty quick. So why don't you wrap this up. Let me know. Let people know what's coming up next that they should, if they're interested in, attend or come to, what they can do to help.
Well, I'm actually concerned about the thing. After I spoke to this nurse at HPHP who gave me their card and said to have my lawyer call me, then I went back by the public defender's office and I spoke to the lawyer who had been assigned to him, and she said my case has been moved. So I'm supposed to appear on the 29th with a new defender. And so I'm kind of apprehensive about the whole thing. But,
so you'll be in court at, what, at 10 o'clock on the 29th?
Or? It's 8:30, Department 1 on the 29th.
All right. Well, listen, let people now know that. And I would encourage you also to post something on indiebay.org about that issue. And, you know, I think the whole focus of harassment of I think it's a personal thing against you because of your outspokenness to some extent. And I think if you can turn it into a broader issue where other individuals may face similar charges for medical marijuana or recreational marijuana use on private property, which should now be the lowest priority, might be a one way to go to get broader public support in your own individual case and also in your campaign. But then again, I'm not your campaign advisor, just a radio commentator.
I am sure I'm not the only medical marijuana patient in this town that's being harassed, but I don't want to make the case that is. I feel like it is a witch hunt. I feel like my crime is that I'm not ashamed of who I am. I'm not ashamed of smoking marijuana. I don't see anything wrong with it. It is medicine that I need, and you know I don't intend to be a prisoner inside my room.
So, Craig, why don't you again give your website, and we'll see if anybody wants to call in and comment on this. I apologize. We only have one line, 469-3119, and you're on it, so we got to hang up on you to get some more calls.
Right, Robert. Okay, my website is www.palmsprings.org, and that is PALMSPRINGSBUM, that's all one word, .org. And on that front page, there should be links to my blog where I've got my my position papers to the campaign and links to the forum where I have the issues discussed in detail and more than you ever wanted to know about me.
Here and there. I've read some of it, and I think it's often useful information, not just about you, but about people in your situation. Thanks for calling in, Craig.
Thank you, Robert.
All righty. And phone lines are hopefully open, 469-3119. And to the techie wizards of free radio, we having a problem with the 427 line, and I sure as hell don't know what the heck is wrong with it. But hopefully somebody else will at some point. As I peer over the whole situation, wondering what the... I can't quite figure it out here. But somebody will, hopefully. So, back to street interviews. And again, anybody wants to call in, 469-3119. Who are you going to be, who are you looking at? What are the issues in the city council races that you think are important? Not to mention the national rush toward war with Russia and the upcoming Democratic coronation. There are all kinds of things that have some kind of, I'm trying to look at the local focus here or the lack of focus that unfortunately most people are, I think, trying to look at something else because the broad picture is so grim. But, hey, here's your chance to comment, particularly on local issues, because that's what I'm interested in here, and local issues that impact poor and homeless people. 469-3119.
If you want, you should contact Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom and talk to us.
I'm trying with them.
We'll try to help you.
I'm trying with them. They both say.
Give us a street name you want to be called.
I don't have.
We'll call you NASA.
What?
NASA.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, NASA. Talking with Free. How many tickets you got, Zay?
I have five.
And they are for?
Various infractions and I think it's maybe one minor misdemeanor or something. Small stuff. About four of them were just unjust stuff.
Sleeping? Or?
A couple of them were sleeping, and then the others just like basic junk, you know. I mean, yeah, where they could have just gave me a warning.
But none of your property has been destroyed recently?
No.
Good. No. Have you heard of anybody's property being destroyed?
No, I haven't.
Excellent. Thank you, Free.
You're welcome, sir. Always.
All right.
Bar. Sorry. Cheers to the bar.
Sorry, Bar.
It's all right.
All right, Bar. Positive report on a police officer. Your name?
Wait. We went over this already. I gotta take it. I'm not okay with all this.
Okay. But you have some positive things.
The officer's name is Pete.
anybody.
Oh, yes.
He just asked us to leave a spot in the middle of the night.
I think I remember we talked about it at some point.
No, was not the other night.
Okay, well, so no ticket, though. You just were asked to leave?
Yeah, he was totally polite.
Thank you. Any hassles, police tickets?
Always, every minute.
Recently?
I got arrested the other
day. Wow, what for?
Being stupid in public.
You don't look stupid. With a guy who has a positive report on the police.
I actually encountered Sergeant Bush recently, and he was very considerate and dignified and respectful. And see, Officer Eric Peabody is a tremendous person, and it's good to see someone like that in the force. They can certainly use it, so it's good to see someone who's a commendable person.
Because you've seen bad police as well.
In my experience, yeah. This is a while back, so I don't know their names.
Good. But, I'm glad you got some positive stuff.
Yeah, it's nice to have that.
Do you want to say who you are, or keep it anonymous?
I'll keep it anonymous. Thank you.
We're talking with
Jay.
Jay, so you got some tickets?
Yeah.
Here in Santa Cruz?
Yep.
And what were they about?
Camping, panhandling, and open container.
And all in the same day, or?
No.
And what were the camping tickets about?
I was sleeping.
Where were you sleeping?
One of them I was in a park, and the other just on the outskirts in the woods.
And was it the same officer or a bunch of officers?
The first one was two officers, the second one was one officer.
Did they give you a legal place to go?
No.
What did they say to you?
That I had to move.
Were you in the Poconip area? Or?
No.
And how many nights have you slept out?
Almost every night. Almost every night since I've been here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry. All right. And any other comments?
No, I just think it's a very large violation of human rights that I can't sleep. Not allowed to.
You're here. We've been talking with?
Jay.
Thanks, Jay. Talking with
Ryan.
And you just finished a good pee.
Yeah, right after a couple of beers.
Ticket is Jesus.
And this officer just kind of put his spotlight on me and told me, what are you doing here? And actually didn't even request to search my vehicle at all. He just asked me if there's something I have to know about in there while I was in cuffs. You know. And not being read my rights at all during this whole process. So I was like...
And how many police were involved?
Actually, two.
And you ended up with a ticket?
Yeah, and they actually took me to jail.
And how long were you held?
10 days.
Wow. What was the charge?
Possession of a controlled substance and transporting controlled substance.
The substance was?
I wasn't transporting it. I was actually stationary.
Were you convicted, or are you still facing court on that?
Actually, that's still in the courts.
And you're charged. What's the controlled substance you're charged with?
Cocaine.
Want a muffin?
Any problems with camping or sleeping?
No, just parking on Highway 9 past sunset. You know, give me a ticket.
You're talking about a large quantity of cocaine or a small quantity?
No, not even, like $5 worth. Rock.
And you were all right.
No. That's about it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, man. So I just got a ticket here handed to me by Chemo, who previously got a scavenging ticket, but this is another one. He's showing me, and he's showing
100%
a 100% outlaw tattoo on his left bicep by Cricky.
He's taking a picture.
But yeah, when did you get this ticket? I can't really read the date. It's like June 26th, a couple weeks ago.
And don't comment. I'm in too much trouble.
You're in too much trouble. How many tickets have you gotten so far on for this subject? That wouldn't really be a comment.
I haven't kept count, but I'm on the run, and I'm running out of counties to run to.
Right here in Santa Cruz, how many tickets for scavenging?
Last count.
Really, a lot of tickets.
Yeah.
So you have been targeted again. Now you were talking.
The police officer didn't give me the ticket. It was the waste management supervisors that said that the cop said he was just the third party, and I know you're not going to stop because you've been doing this a long time, and just don't say anything and sign a ticket.
Well, that could be... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's one way to deal with it, I guess. Well, if you got any further reports, Schema, let us know.
Okay. Only an infraction, and it's a misdemeanor out of the city that's really...
Money. Oh, I want your wallet. Thank you.
Thank you. Another one of those thugs that hangs around.
Did you get my comment about I'm an American citizen of Hawaiian descent, and I have the right to remain silent?
Even if you were an Iraqi citizen of Kuwaiti descent, you would have the right to remain silent. But I hear you. Right on, man.
And this is a guy who's been getting tickets for taking material out of trash cans and taking it to recycling centers, or taking it out of private garbage cans with the permission of the people and getting, or in the absence of their objection, and getting ticketed because the city now is claiming that all recycling belongs to it. Once you put your recycling can on the curbside, if it's being used maybe to go after large profiteers who are running around, you know, engaging in seizing revenue from the city, I might have more sympathy. But this is going after poor people who have no or very few other sources of income, and I think it's outrageous. And you also see a campaign of defamation and demonization going on if you look at the literature handed out by the Public Works Department, which kind of slurs people who recycle cans and so forth as being dangerous and potential criminals and report them to the police and that sort of thing. And this actually comes out with your funding as a city-funded piece of literature, which you can pick up at the Public Works Department, what I like to call the Public Jerks Department occasionally. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. The call-in number is 469-3119. The usual call-in number doesn't seem to be going through to the board, which means the connections aren't being appropriately connected. But hopefully that will be repaired soon, not necessarily on my show, but on another. For those who are regular listeners to this show, on Sunday, when I do a longer version of this show, there's going to be some special guests calling in. There's going to be Frank Lucido, who's a doctor particularly concerned with decriminalizing pain medication so that he can prescribe it to patients more effectively and more easily. There's going to be, hopefully, Pebbles Trippett, who's a medical marijuana patients activist for many years, from Mendocino, calling in to talk about the struggle up there against know-nothing drug warrior mentality in the Proposition B that I talked about on the air, which vastly cut back the amount of marijuana available to marijuana patients and then was put on hold through activism by marijuana patients and other activists in Mendocino County, given the state courts' rulings that Proposition 215, the Medical Marijuana Initiative, does not allow the state to limit the amount of marijuana to be grown, at least not in the way it's been doing, and therefore it doesn't allow cities and counties to put sharp limits on marijuana growing and so forth. She'll be talking to us. She's talked to us before. She's been to jail for her beliefs. She's a very articulate writer for the Anderson Valley Advertiser. She'll be on at noon on Sunday, coming up on the 24th. Frank Lucido will probably be on around 10 or 11, if I'm not mistaken. And we're also hoping to get a report from Peggy Lee Kennedy, who's a Santa Monica activist. I was sent the following story both by Vision Song Valerie, who's with SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, and a defender of the rights of homeless people, along with a lot of other Huffsters, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedomsters, and also came on the, I think it was the resist.com email list. If you're interested in catching the latest about what's being done to or for street performers in different cities, I think it's resist.com. Give me a call at 423-HUFF. That's the off-air number, 423-HUFF. And I will give you information to put you on that kind of a list if you want more information about street performers and how they're weathering the growing gentrification and fascistization, dare we say, or militarization of the country, or intolerance. The previous show, you may remember from Sprouts, talked about the group Hungry March Band in New York City that is essentially being driven to ground or driven out by reactionary policies in New York City. So it's not just New York City, unfortunately, where it's happening. It's happening everywhere. Santa Cruz public spaces are being stolen by city council under the direction and, the leadership of Mayor Ryan Coonerty, who's running for re-election, who has made 10 square blocks of the city essentially forbidden zones unless you're parking your car or your bicycle, and then only for 10 or 15 minutes, the parking lots and garages, the parking lot panic law, as I've called it. He's an important man to beat, not because he's unusually evil or anything, but he is really an archetypal example of hypocrisy and phony liberalism, which actually is the exact opposite of that. I mean, you see it in Obama's campaigns, too, but and ironically, of course, Coonerty was denied Obama delegateship because people actually realized for the first time his record in cutting back these public spaces and cutting back public access time at city council and his kind of knee-jerk support of the police department's overreaching political investigations a couple years ago, which it still hasn't changed as far as I know, and trying to close down peaceful December 31st last night ceremonies and marches and celebrations, the kind of stuff that was being done to the marching band, the Hungry Marching Band in New York City. So, Coonerty is getting an award this Sunday, and I've mentioned this before. I hope to post something about it on Indie Bay, Santa Cruz Indie Media, for those of you who are interested. Just Google for Santa Cruz, INDY Media, and you'll get Santa Cruz Indie Media. Lots of local stories, and I hope to be posting something about the ACLU's remarkable decision to give Coonerty an award. It's so-called the Hammer of Justice Award. And it's not at all clear why he's being given this award. It's going to be happening. It starts at 3 o'clock on Sunday. And that's going to be out at the Marine Lab area. And that is, I can give... I'm going to kind of be posting the address on the Indie Bay website, but for those who can't wait, and actually I've got to pull it up on the computer, see where we can go with this. Let's see here. Here it is. I sent this out as an email to a lot of people. Santa Cruz official to receive ACLU award for keeping the homeless down. And it reads, who's interested in coming to a protest Sunday afternoon around 3 p.m. or in supporting such a protest by making signs? We need to know this to adequately prepare a peaceful educational protest for Sunday's ACLU award ceremony. The local ACLU plans to present Mayor Ryan Coonerty with the Hammer of Justice Award Sunday between 3 and 6 p.m. August 24th in the La Felix Room of the Seymour Center at the Long Marine Laboratory at 100 Schaefer Road. It's on the north end of town, kind of out near the coast. Again, 100 Schaefer Road at the Long Marine Laboratory. The rationale for the ACLU's decision made by a minority of its members is reportedly in praise of his constitutional law classes at Cabrillo and UCSC. And this is the same council member and ACLU board member at the same place that council member Rotkin, who's also on the ACLU board, tried to block a number of us trying to go into their public meeting last year to urge them to support ending the sleeping ban, which ACLUs in other cities have done, but this city so far has steadfastly refused to do, in spite of what might seem the obvious civil liberties violations that have even been upheld as violations by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the Jones case, and that has turned into real changes in the law in Los Angeles, San Diego, Fresno, and Richmond, and perhaps Palo Alto, too, I've recently heard, although that may have been before the Jones decision. But the right to sleep is something that is involuntary. You have to be able to sleep legally somewhere, and you can't arrest someone for the crime of sleeping without essentially arresting them for the crime of being homeless, because that's what you're doing. If they have nowhere to sleep, they're going to have to sleep. And therefore, it becomes a status crime, and that's what the court felt, that that's cruel and unusual punishment. And the police can't do that in cities where there is clearly inadequate shelter, which is most cities, and certainly includes Santa Cruz, which tonight has space for, what, 80 people? The number has gone up in the last couple months with the opening of the Paul Lee Community Shelter or some such thing, out at the Homeless Service Center. But it's still a drop in the bucket compared to the 1,500 to 2,000 people who are out there every night. So the idea that the mayor of Santa Cruz is going to get an award from the American Civil Liberties Union, essentially just for teaching classes in constitutional law that tell people it's very bad to take away the rights of people in Guantanamo or in Iraq, but then shows that he actually initiates taking away those rights in Santa Cruz, where it's an even more fundamental right. It's like supporting torture in Santa Cruz but opposing it in Guantanamo, because denying a person the right to sleep at night, as Coonerty does with his support for the sleeping ban, is a form of torture and violates international treaties, common sense, basic religious doctrines. And also, obviously, doesn't work, because people will sleep anyway. So it's a crazy thing. When we went there last year to the ACLU public meeting, Rotkin actually physically blocked us, tried to have me arrested, because we were carrying in signs saying, you know, end the sleeping ban, ACLU, when are you going to do what your other ACLUs have done? And the saddest thing of all was that no one in the ACLU said to Mike Rotkin, you know, Mike, this is the ACLU meeting. We're not going to ban signs. If these people are disruptive and stop a ceremony or something or start getting violent with people, then, you know, we can take action. But you can't. Free speech is the issue that our organization was founded for. But no one said that. No one said that. Instead, they said, oh, you weren't invited here. And I said, yeah, well, it's open to the public. And I called first. And I said, well, you haven't given any money to go in. I said, well, people don't have to go in. Donations are voluntary. And then they said, well, you can come in without your signs. And I said, well, the signs are a part of why we're here. We are here to rouse the conscience of the ACLU to make changes that other ACLUs have been struggling to make in other cities. And that we brought before the ACLU time and time again in their private sessions and seen them in private session without even hearing why disappear into a black hole. So Rotkin called the police. Police came out in some numbers, and they told Rotkin, he can't be arrested. There's no basis. You have a public meeting here. And so we went in. And the irony, that's the other sad thing, that who are the guardians of our rights? The police department. I mean, in a way that's good, but in another sense, I think maybe the police department maybe enjoyed embarrassing the American Civil Liberties Union. Who knows? Or embarrassing Rotkin or something. They have a sort of on-again, off-again relationship with Rotkin. Is often, in fact, almost always a supporter of the police department, but on a few occasions he's been on the other side. Many years ago, you know, he always likes to talk about his older activist credentials when he was a fiery radical in the days of his youth. He had some issues with the police, but not recently, as far as I know. Anyway, the ACLU meeting is coming up again. This time, as I said, it's an award ceremony. They're going to give the Brown Berets an award. They're going to give a couple other high school students an award. In fact, their press release states, let's see here. I'm going to the press release now. It was in the Sentinel. It reads, high school essay contest winners Laurel Wormer and Eileen Kitayama will be recognized, and special awards will be given to other ACLU honorees. The Distinguished Service Award will go to David Sweet, Bell of Freedom Award to Carol Fuller, Hammer of Justice to Ryan Coonerty, and True Patriots to the Brown Berets. That's a call, and unfortunately it's a call on the wrong line. Caller, you have to call on the 469-3119 line. Let me see. I'll see who it is and tell them. Hi there, caller. I can't quite put you on the air because we have screw-ups in the studio, but if you call back at 469-3119, I can. Is this a call you want to go on the air with? Okay, we'll call back at 469-3119. Yeah. Alrighty. And the caller will be calling back. And again, that's the number to call tonight. And in fact, usually that's a line that's usable. And hopefully it will stay usable tonight. The press release about the Sunday ACLU deal continues. The public is invited to enjoy refreshments, listen, dance, and to the marimba band Singing Wood, and to talk with the award recipients. Okay, here's our caller. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to say a piece about the so-called mental health system that sucks. Can you hear me?
I can.
Let me turn the radio down.
Yeah, don't definitely turn your radio down. Have you been you've been listening to the show, caller?
Okay, turn the radio down.
Have you been listening to the show?
Yes, I have. I know you were talking about other things.
Okay, well, go ahead.
This needs to be
That's okay. Go ahead.
Until people hear it and believe it.
Go ahead.
Anyway, I'd prefer to remain anonymous at this time.
Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to say a piece about the so-called mental health system that sucks people in, including innocent children, chews them up, drugs them up, assaults their humanity, destroys families, lives, and abuses by forced drugging and other atrocities against the Constitution. It can cause worsening of symptoms, talking about forced drugging especially right now, epilepsy, lethargy, and even death, and make a wonderful artist not be able to hold a pencil, or make a hungry person not being able to feed themselves.
So, caller, because, you know, let me interrupt you because we actually, as you probably know, we've covered this topic on at length with Robert Whitaker, and we're actually going to have Jim Gottstein, who's preparing legal briefs against forced drugging for New York State and was looking for attorneys in California to challenge forced drugging because it's been found constitutionally defective. You can only force a person to, you know, to take medication if it's the least restrictive alternative, if they're fully informed of the side effects. There's a whole bunch of requirements that are essentially ignored by psychiatric and judicial authorities in many states, and I suspect that's also true in Santa Cruz.
Could I just say a few more words, please?
Sure.
I have seen it myself as a result of over-drugging, and I now have epilepsy caused probably by forced drugging. And I have lost my family, friends, and everything I own repeatedly in this so-called free town to those psycho-Nazis called healers. Psychiatry is a multi-billion dollar game, and my advice to everyone is to look for other kinds of help. Citizens Commission on Human Rights actually says Dominican Hospital in Santa Cruz is one of the worst abuse complaints about abuse by doctors and staff in the entire state and maybe in the whole USA. Many complaints about human rights abuses right here in good old Santa Cruz.
Yeah, and the more specific we get about that, caller, the better. I'm all for attacking psychiatric forced drugging, but the problem is, you know, one can say that 5 or 6 or 8 times, but until you get specifics, it doesn't really give us any new info. Know what I mean?
Well, I myself could write a 10-volume book on it. And I have never done an act of violence to anyone in my life or been a threat to society. I've been accused of not being able to take care of myself when my money was stolen by the people that work in the system that take your money away and think they can handle it better than you can. And then they tell you you can't provide for yourself. And it's just a horrible game, and it's just a whole atrocity, and I think people should look at it for real. It's not just a way to put away people that act a little
different. But what I'm telling you, caller, is you need to have your specifics and the specifics of others out there on the table for people to look at and for people to be able to make judgments on. I know that people like Jane Kaiser and the organization, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, and then John Telfair's Madhouse Exit, or maybe that was John Stewart's organization. There were a number of organizations in the past that dealt with this, but now there doesn't seem to be much activism happening around these issues.
In Santa Cruz, many people have left.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm thinking of doing that myself and never coming back. But it's a national thing, it actually is. And
for sure.
People need to take a real good look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I always say that, but what I need from people out there, yourself included, is more actual details of particular abuses that are happening, and that.
Well,
is,
I could, like I said, write a 10-volume book.
Good. Well,
I'm trying not to think of it all right now.
I hear you, but write a 2-page summary, and then maybe we can bring up those cases in a more meaningful way. But I thank you for calling in. Any last words?
I hope everyone has a peaceful evening.
You too.
Love you, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And our phone lines are open on the alternate phone line, 469-3119. As I was saying before, the ACLU will be hosting a ceremony, and there will be an opportunity to have dialogue with ACLU members. According to their own press handout, the public is invited to enjoy refreshments, listen and dance to the marimba band singing wood, and to talk with the award recipients. The event will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. August 24th, that's Sunday, 3 days away, in the La Felix Room of the Seymour Center at the Long Marine Laboratory, 100 Schaefer Road. Donations are requested. That does not mean they are required. It doesn't say that. For information, contact Mike Rotkin, 423-4209. So maybe what we should do is give a call to Mike and find out what the story is with that. I think I'll actually try and do that now and see if we can get any more information on this situation. So we're ringing Mike Rotkin. I think this is his home phone. And it might not be the right time to catch him. It's about 7:05 in the evening, so we're a little bit late. But I'll leave him a message.
You've reached 423-4209. To leave a message for Mike, push pound 2.
Message.
Hi, Mike. This is Robert calling in from Free Radio Santa Cruz about the ACLU Hosts Awards ceremony coming up on the 24th. And I was reading over the public statement made by the ACLU and printed in the Sentinel, pointing out that it's in public is invited to enjoy refreshments, listen and dance to the marimba band, and so forth. Some of us are wondering the exact reasons that Mayor Ryan Coonerty is getting this award, the Hammer of Justice Award, what specific achievements and accomplishments he did. And obviously, you know, I obviously have a different view on this than you do. I find it somewhat outrageous. But maybe you were present at that process, and you can let us know, and I'll pass that word on to the listeners as to what the ACLU's reasons are for giving this to someone whose positions on the city council have gone directly counter to even those of the local ACLU on such matters as the parking lot panic law, as I call it. I think even you opposed the expansion of that law. So let me know about that. And please try not to arrest us when we show up to peacefully mingle with the guests. Thanks. And that was a call to Councilmember Mike Rotkin. His phone number, for those who are interested, and it's publicly noticed, is 423-4209. I should say that in the studio with me, I have an individual who I have often cut off in the past and may cut off again in the future, but she cuts me off too. Who knows? We cut each other off. This is the chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force, whose voice you heard on Sunday, if you were listening around 9:30. That was many years ago. That was 8 years ago when she chaired that commission. But the commission still came out with quite a report, which is online, gave a number of good recommendations, which the city council then dutifully ignored, generally. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Robert.
That's Linda LeMaster.
Top, top, top.
Or Lighthouse Linda, as I
thank you
call her. And Linda's brought a whole bunch of papers with her, which she's going to talk about, perhaps, around issues of poverty pimpery, as I put it, organizations that suck money from the federal government and then claim to be helping homeless people. Only a fraction of it ever gets to the homeless people, and they're actually sort of agencies to, it's a cash cow for a few people. It's a sort of a community-pleasing, it's a cover for merchants and politicians who want to make like they're doing something but don't really want to do something meaningful like get affordable housing, stop pandering to gentrification and development for the rich, and actually serve the communities that they live in with the entire community. And most specifically, the very, very low-income part of the community and the homeless community. In fact, since you're here, Linda, and you're making like you want to say something, why not just say it? Go ahead.
I thought I should respond to that poverty pimpling thing. I don't stop you because I don't disagree with you that there's an element of what you call poverty pimps involved in these trickle-down distribution of taxpayer funds, but I don't quite see it as the evil empire as it sounds like you describe. I see it more as an attempt by our federal government, which is obviously not representative or a real democracy in the essential meaning, to keep taxpayers paying taxes and to keep the poor, in this case, in terms of what I'm doing, homeless people, from getting together too fast or getting too upset. In other words, this is our government's investment in keeping us quiet.
Well, what exactly are we talking about, Linda? You have this hefty stack of papers with you.
I didn't mean to bring in the papers, and I haven't had a chance to go over them, Robert, but I promise I'd come by.
But you just came from a meeting of some kind? Or?
No, I had to get these documents today in order to read them by Monday, analyze them by Tuesday, and emailed to somewhere to an attorney the my personal rating of these applications. These are funding requests from different organizations that in some way help homeless people,
so,
mostly shelters, so-called.
So in Santa Cruz County we're talking
about?
Yes,
Santa Cruz countywide. And this entity, and I can't think of a more precise word for it than entity, is called the Continuum of Care. I mentioned it on your show about annually, and I've been on this coalition, or you might say board, for more years than I've come to your show. And their job, among a few other essential things, is to take these funds from the feds and distribute them the best way possible and somehow jump over all the hurdles and hoops to do that.
Well, we know, and I can I interrupt you, or you have more you wanted to say? I call it the continuum. I think I call it the consortium of carelessness, but it's actually the continuum of crap. Because fundamentally, obviously, how much money have they gotten in the last 10 years that you're aware of?
In the last 10 years? I don't know.
Or in the last year?
I'm really not going to remember.
Are we talking about millions, tens of millions, thousands? 50?
Yeah, Santa Cruz gets about a little over 1.5 million this coming year. And it's had, a chunk more or less the last 2 years.
So $1.5 million a year is more than enough to fund emergency campgrounds for people year round. I would say 3 or 4 times as much is required to do that. And the fact that that basic emergency shelter has never been provided for homeless people shows me that the continuum of care is the continuum of crap. Just sort of taking the basic bottom line that. If you don't deal, and I'm almost finished. If you don't deal with the basic need, then you can talk about all kinds of other shit that you want, but you're not dealing with the basic issue, and therefore you're letting it go. So
you're talking about this, let me say, funding mechanism. But the money goes to mostly nonprofits. It could go to others if anybody else was doing it. But they are providing very basic services, like getting you inside, even though it might only be for a month. You know, if you've been outside for a lot more than a month, you need that month.
They don't get you inside. They get a small number of people inside. The average you does not get inside. See, that's the misrepresentation and the reason whenever you show up at a Huff meeting or don't show up at a Huff meeting because you've been too busy doing this kind of stuff, and I regard you as a kind of a minion of, you know, the consortium or the continuum of crap.
If you regard me as a minion, imagine how those other people who have jobs feel when I go to acting
as though poverty pimps have some sort of serious place in the community and they're worth spending time and energy on has always seemed to me to be, you know, futile. Now, admittedly, some people think ranting about the sleeping ban for 20 years is also a futile enterprise, but at least you're talking about true things. This
is a true thing. It's just, according to your criteria, it's a bad true thing. It's not even a diversion.
It's a diversion. It's a way of avoiding.
How is it a diversion?
Because you're not dealing with essential issues for the average home.
It's just a very expensive way to do a very small thing.
It doesn't deal with the essential issue, which is basic shelter for homeless people. Period. It doesn't. They have the funding, and they aren't doing it. I mean, there's no way around it.
They give this money to people that are doing that.
But
they don't do it competitively.
Then they're giving it to people who aren't doing it, because we know there's not emergency shelter tonight for any more than 80 people in this city. So.
Not emergency shelter. And this money, you're right, is really meant to go to emergency people. But, Robert, if they closed the family shelter here in Santa Cruz, finally there after much... I'll skip that. Beep, beep, beep. Or if they close the door, if the people at Pajaro Valley Shelter don't get infusions of cash to the two shelters there, they have emergency and transitional in Watsonville, do you realize how many more people would be out on the street with children and babies?
Yeah, there'd be another 7 or 8% of the population of the homeless people would be out on the street. And I think that's a significant number. But obviously, if you're claiming to be part of the 10-year plan to end homelessness, which is the little phrase that's used by the Bush and presumably by the Clinton administration beforehand, don't take it personally. You happen to be, you know, you're walking in that role with these papers in front of you, and therefore, you know, that's the role you're in. Then you're not doing your job, and you're misleading the public. This group is misleading the public. And I'm not the only one who believes this. You talk to Fresno homeless advocates, they'll say exactly the same thing. This is throwing a little money to a few people and pretending that you're actually addressing the problem is a bunch of horseshit.
So by your logic, that it would have the same impact as taking a chunk of this money, giving it to your buddy or your nephew who's running a front, that a facade that pretends to be a shelter. It would have the same net effect or impact.
No, I told you it has a positive impact on 7% of the homeless population.
But you know what housing costs here.
So what?
Imagine housing with 6 or 10 bedrooms.
It claims to be dealing with 100% and it deals with 7%.
No,
it's bullshit.
It doesn't. It has a bunch of goals that claim to have a 10-year plan to somehow touch 100%.
Not to touch. To end homelessness.
But as you know...
Hold it. Isn't a 10-year plan to end homelessness?
That's just a hyperbole title.
Oh, it's just a... I don't think it's a hyperbole total.
Whether they're bureaucrats or nurses or you or me, know that this is not the way you're going to end homelessness.
Well, I know it, and you know it. The question is, why are you doing it anyway? But that's not really...
I could tell you if you let me. But you have to allow me to say it from what I'm doing and not from your poverty pimp mentality.
You know, the problem is that I guess I really don't care what the personal reason is that you choose to do this. Because, I mean, I think...
Because you've already made up your mind, and you don't even want your listeners to get a little different,
you can talk about it, but the point, you know, I mean, I am really interested in not giving a lot of publicity and time to a group and organization that serves only a small number of people, ultimately.
I'm not asking for that, Robert. I just want people to.
I mean,
know
you're
that
defending yourself, and I'm not getting a chance
to defend myself.
Go ahead, defend yourself.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Well, I'm going to use an example that I shared with you and whoever was listening here last year. Because I was present and Jim Moran, who's now deceased immediately after becoming not homeless, after long years of homelessness, happened to be at a certain meeting. Oh, and Nick Whitehead was at that meeting too, but not as a person who's tasted homelessness. Because we were there, money went to dentistry that would not have gone that way, that nobody in the bureaucracy business could see was what homeless people in the street were asking for. So we have, in this little way, accomplished something that really relates to the real need. That's just my example. And I want to tell you why I'm doing it. Because they need that point of view. They need somebody that has some wear and tear on the bottom of their shoes. And even if I'm just talking to the other people at the big table, and it doesn't influence the trickle-down theory and how it plays
tinkle
out.
Tinkle down, actually.
Tinkle down?
Tinkle down.
Tinkle. All right, I like that. That's poetic. I like metaphor.
But they're
even,
pissing on the homeless,
even if,
I'm saying.
Even if, in general, nobody who goes there's jobs change, nobody who doesn't get to go there because they're homeless finds out about it, at least it diverts some of that funding to what is actual felt needs among people who are actually homeless. So that's why I go. Mm-hmm. And I'm not paid, so I don't have any conflict of interest, so it's not some kind of a shell game for
you. You should
me.
Be paid. You're one of the poorest people probably in the room.
I could use
meetings.
A gas budget, but it ain't going to happen mm-hmm. if the federal government is the source.
So, yeah, I mean, again, you're saying the same thing you said when you walked in. That's the reason I didn't really want to hear it again, which is that, you know, some help gets to some homeless people. And that's true. But it
no,
is,
I was saying
it
that about
so
the whole
little.
CFC.
It is
now
so little.
I'm saying it comes out differently because I sit through these long, difficult meetings. And I crunch numbers even though I have a number disability. It comes out a little different because I can go sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I try to go as much
well,
as I can.
In all honesty,
and I wish other people would go, and that's why I'm here.
In all honesty, I'm not really in a position because I'm not crunching those numbers. I'm not at those meetings. I don't have other people who are there to give me reports. The few I've been to in the past, and painful as they are to watch, it's just, you know, it's not something I tend to think that, you know, this has a bad impact on you, too, because it helps you hone your kissy-kissy skills with these people.
Thanks.
But I don't know. Maybe you come on. Well, I think I've seen you do that repeatedly.
You're talking about an old
something else. That's, well, perhaps. But, you know, in any case, you were going to give kind of a report on this. And you haven't actually done your figure crunching, so we can't really ask you to give a report. So I think what I'm going to do is move on to other topics that I'm going to be covering.
Well, can I just make an announcement to everyone
and
listening?
Of course, you can. And when I do, you're, of course, invited to comment on those topics as well. You know, go ahead. You have an announcement to make? Go ahead.
I'm attempting. I wanted to say people need to give this entity feedback, and here's a phone number. Well, things are changing, but the Human Services Department has been the shepherd for this so the county can even get the money. And their phone number is 454-4130 or 454-4045. And if you've had either a really good experience or a really bad experience when you needed to get a phone or a night in a hotel or a month in one of the homeless shelters or your kid back from social services or foster care or a food voucher or just a ride to the hospital, you need to call these people and pursue it and make sure they're hearing what works and doesn't work in this field. Because I can't figure it all out even when I have time to hang out and health to hang out in the streets.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you've got the numbers there, folks, and if you want to follow that up, feel free to do so. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm in the studio with Linda LeMaster, and a phone line in case you want to call in and praise or denounce Human Services Department, Continuum of Care, or talk about any of the other subjects we've been discussing. Actually, we talked about the ACLU, and it's weird perspective in giving Ryan Coonerty, Mayor of Santa Cruz, the Hammer of Justice Award. We're thinking of giving him the Zucchini of Justice Award, perhaps more, maybe giving the ACLU itself the Zucchini of Justice Award. We're not sure. We're still working on that.
How about the Nails of Abuse and Disenfranchisement?
Something. I mean, it's very strange that people who are in, you know, who are taking actions that are opposed to basic civil liberties, not just for poor and homeless people, but for the entire community, are getting awards from organizations that are supposedly supporting the rights of all people that have been taken away by the national government, by the national legislature, and for years by the city governments, for at least for poor people. So, I'm about to go on to something else, Linda, but you have your finger on a piece of paper. What is it you want to bring up?
Just for my brain. I have a question about your show because I can't hear it any at all where I live, and I just heard about 20 minutes before I got here. But has anyone called in about how it's going over on Beach Street about this gathering protest for the La Bahia and the La Super Bahia?
No, though there is a protest. There was a protest at 5:30 today, as I recall. And if you want more information, you can also go to brucebratton.org, I believe it is. He's the he's got some, you know, connections and information, although Bruce is not a positive thing to say about me or other hucksters since we kicked his sacred cow, Ryan Coonerty's bookshop Santa Cruz business, which apparently he regards as kind of sacrosanct and can't be criticized. We did a protest in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz for a number of weeks last year because Mayor Coonerty is, you know, often there and was working there at the time. He's still vice president of the business, as far as I know, according to his SEIU papers that he filed with them. And he supports a lot of repressive legislation, specifically the city's sleeping ban, the city's downtown ordinances that police use selectively to go after poor and homeless people downtown for innocent behavior like sitting on the sidewalk or peacefully spare changing or performing with a musical instrument. And that's not the only city that's doing it. Santa Monica has a story that I got, as I was mentioning before, from the L.A. Times by Martha Groves, Beggars Can't Be Sitters on Santa Monica's Benches. At least Santa Monica has some benches left. There are significant numbers of benches have disappeared in Santa Cruz and not been replaced, particularly up around the metro where the benches that were just next to Tampico's and across the street and near the metro have all disappeared and been taken out. You get the most bizarre pretext, like Sergeant Harms told us, oh, they were the benches were too icky to sit on. Ask yourself how often you've seen a bench return to the position from which it was taken. We've attempted to track down these benches. It's a cell phone in the studio. We will be shooting the cell phone person shortly.
Apologies.
That's okay.
And the other benches are all fenced in like a corral, right?
No, I mean, there's some benches that are there, and, of course, we have areas that are being fenced off like or chained off, like the New Leaf Market area. We're going to be hearing some tape on that. But this story from Santa Monica, hopefully we'll get it expanded and discussed further by Peggy Lee Kennedy on Sunday, because we may have her calling in. And this is how it reads. Santa Monica has a message for panhandlers on the 3rd Street Promenade. Stand up, please. If you're going to ask for cheeseburgers or spare change or sell cookies and you know who you are, don't do it while resting on one of the public chairs or benches. That goes for you, Mr. Greenpeace advocate, and you too, Little Miss Girl Scout. Having restricted to some degree where homeless people can eat and sleep, Santa Monica is zeroing in on panhandlers. The city council voted unanimously last month to prohibit solicitation by anyone sitting on public chairs or benches on the 3rd Street Promenade and the so-called transit mall between the two neighboring streets, Broadway and Santa Monica Boulevard. The ordinance, which must be approved in a second reading, expected next month, does not seek to ban panhandling or solicitation outright, but rather to free up limited public seating. The key issue is that the city needs to be open to the public, said Kathleen Rawson, executive director of the Bayside District Corporation, the public-private partnership that manages the downtown business district, and urged the council to consider the restriction. When the city installed the slatted metal and wooden chairs and benches, Rawson said they were not intended for use by people trying to make a living. The ordinance is aimed at opening resting spots that are often monopolized for hours at a time by panhandlers, many of whom are homeless. The city already prohibits the promenade's street performers from sitting on public chairs or benches. Thousands of visitors and residents compete daily for about 100 seats. Panhandlers will be allowed to stand as they seek handouts and to use the public seating when they're not soliciting. In theory, Santa Monica police will be watching for violations. Applying the ordinance to all types of solicitation should shield the city from First Amendment challenges, said City Attorney Martha Mutri. Santa Monica, which already prohibits soliciting near bus stops and ATMs, will join other cities imposing restrictions on panhandling. Guess who leads that? Medford, Oregon, enacted an ordinance this year banning solicitation at busy intersections, on public transportation vehicles, and in public parking lots. Under a new law in Roseburg, Oregon, motorists can be ticketed for giving money to panhandlers. Denver and Baltimore have placed old parking meters around town and encourage people to put money into the meters instead of giving it to panhandlers. Proceeds will go to organizations fighting homelessness. Maybe like the continuum of care, eh, Linda? A study in Denver found that panhandlers, most of whom were not homeless, took in more than $4 million a year. Santa Monica is developing an education campaign about panhandling and plans to promote the idea of giving to organizations that help homeless people rather than to individuals, says Julie Rusk, Human Services Manager. During the 1980s and 1990s, Santa Monica had a reputation for providing services and allowing activities such as mass feedings in parks that attracted droves of homeless people. The city appeared to be all but embracing the indigent. But in 2002, under pressure from businesses and residents, the Santa Monica City Council passed ordinances making it illegal to sit or lie down in downtown doorways and limiting free outdoor meals. As a result, the city made the National Coalition for the Homeless's 20 meanest cities list. So did we, actually. Said Michael Stoops, the advocacy organization's acting executive director. He said the new ordinance was ill-conceived. It's clear the ordinance is trying to get rid of unsightly homeless folks who are sitting on benches, he said. Tony Robinson, an associate professor of political science at the University of Colorado, Denver, said public attitudes toward homelessness and panhandling had hardened in recent years, with many cities passing laws that require the time, place, and manner of speaking. In the 1960s and 70s, he said society and the courts were more accepting of panhandling as an example of free speech. I don't actually think that's true, but in the 1972 opinion, U.S. Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas, noting Walt Whitman's Song of the Open Road, applauded the right of walkers and wanderers to be nonconformists. Today, Robinson said, we're far more concerned about public safety and law and order than free speech. One recent lunchtime, little panhandling could be observed on or near the 3rd Street Promenade. One grubby fellow sat on a public chair asking for nothing. Chairs and benches were occupied mostly by visitors from out of town. Told about the ordinance, Sarah Robbins, 37, of Houston, said she thought it was fair to make it less comfortable to panhandle, adding the point is you don't want anyone to hog the bench. Boy, I am really biting my tongue because I got all kinds of comments to make about this stuff, but let me continue to finish this up. Nearby, a street guitarist strummed a tune as he sat on a public chair, his belongings piled on a rolling cart, and his guitar case open at his feet. Standing silently nearby was a man who identified himself as Bam Bam, 27. His crudely printed cardboard sign read, having visions of cheeseburger, please spare change. A woman emerged from a food court and handed him a bag with a cheeseburger, which he tucked into a backpack. They're just trying to make it harder and harder to make a dollar, he said. I don't sit out here all day. I stay until I get a cheeseburger and a couple of dollars so I can buy cigarettes. That's a story from the L.A. Times about Santa Monica and a new ordinance there. Considering it's already passed a first reading, beggars can't be sitters on Santa Monica's benches. Any comments, Linda?
Well, where would you start? I mean, it's kind of poignant because it's Santa Monica, you know, who at least for that few years thought of homeless people as human beings. So that's poignant. But it's like the article says, it's a trend in this country to see if you can stomp on people that are outside or dismissed. You know, I mean, I see it as a attempt to frighten them out of society altogether because they don't have any money. And that's what everybody thinks is God, I suppose.
Well, you know,
We're killing people because they can't curtsy right and they don't have the right color socks. That's what it boils down to. When you chase someone out into the woods or under the bridges, you know that's what's happening. But we all do it because we want each other to feel comfortable ourselves because we do pay taxes. And it's inhumane. And there's a lot of Americans, the way things are going, that are going to be tasting what they've created.
I think that shows some real insight into it. I think also what I want to do is run through this article and just kind of give you some of the reactions I had.
Yeah.
One is, you know, the obvious parallels with Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz, it has this ridiculous law that you're supposed to stand up to panhandle, which, actually, if you look at the lettering of the law, it's illegal to sit on the sidewalk and panhandle, too, because it's illegal to sit on public property, and the sidewalk is public property. Police have never enforced this provision, but that, in fact, is the letter of the Santa Cruz panhandling law. What they do enforce to some extent, selectively, in Santa Cruz is it's illegal to panhandle within 14 feet of a building if you are seated. Actually, no. Whether you're seated or not, it's illegal to panhandle within 14 feet of a building. It's illegal to sit within 14 feet of a building as well, even if you're not panhandling. And that means that throughout all of downtown Santa Cruz, there's only one street you're actually allowed to be on. That's Pacific Avenue, and do that legally. Because in other places, the sidewalks are not 14 feet wide. And therefore, you can't sit on any sidewalk, and you can't panhandle on any sidewalk that's near a building. So Santa Monica actually has, I'm not aware of the other laws around panhandling, and I don't trust either Los Angeles Times reporting necessarily to be that thorough about it. And I'm hoping to get a more elaborate and detailed analysis from Peggy Lee Kennedy on Sunday. Mm-hmm. But I suspect Santa Monica is more liberal in its panhandling laws than Santa Cruz is. Santa Cruz, in 1994, under the leadership of supervisor, then council member Neil Coonerty, Ryan Coonerty's father, gave us the worst panhandling law in the state, if not the country. The most restrictive law. Just like we have the most restrictive sleeping ban law, we have the most restrictive panhandling law. Now, some people might say, well, look at all the homeless and counterculture people who come through Santa Cruz anyway. I mean, you don't see that many people in Carmel. Mike Rotkin always makes this point. Mm-hmm. You don't see that many people in Monterey because they have a police policy of just throwing people out, perhaps, or being much harsher toward them. We heard that from Ben, a vet from Monterey, who called in on Sunday and gave a report.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there are legal places they can go, too. You know, maybe it's in Monterey or Carmel. They're not going out of their way to eliminate the bench at the library or the market.
Well, I mean, there's a number of ways of looking at, you know, responding to Rotkin's commentary on this, which is that Santa Cruz really is a wonderful liberal town because they clarify all their laws so in such detail by saying, see, we don't make panhandling illegal. We just limit it to, the curb of parts of Pacific Avenue. You know, and you can't do it at all during the nighttime hours, even if you're doing it silently with a sign. That's a law that Mayor Coonerty supports.
What's insidious here, Robert, is that backing these laws is this really antagonistic social spirit or mood, you know, where the merchant clubs are going out of their way to create campaigns to preach to people, oh, don't give them a quarter, give it to the food bank or something, you know, and
the parking meters.
It's
parking
like,
meters for the
it's
homeless.
It's like, say, don't eat a banana, eat an orange. You know, it's not what the food bank needs and what the guy who's shoeless on the street needs are not the same thing.
Well, I mean, I think, frankly, that that city council can listen to whoever it wants to. And I don't think the city council is required to listen to narrow, bigoted business and conservative residential interests who have, frankly, short-sighted and rather, I think, often absurd views of how to deal with people.
It's selfish.
It isn't just selfish. I think it's self-defeating as well as being selfish. I mean, it's often said Santa Cruz is, you know, a lot of its lure comes from its diversity. Maybe, you know, and obviously there are plenty of merchants who don't think that. They think, you know, make it another San Jose. We'll get what we need here through developing the place to death with a non-union labor and so forth. But I think we have this elaborate set of laws, the worst in the state on panhandling, the worst in the state on sleeping, and they're justified by people who like to consider themselves civil libertarians, like Rotkin and Coonerty. And it's amazing that in Santa Monica, this I'm looking at the article that they passed. You don't have to respond to the business interests. You could respond to other groups of people. You could respond to social service groups. You could respond to civil liberties groups. You could respond to
people that live downtown, persons living there.
You could, you know, I mean, it seems to me that, there are other ways to go than the ways that, politicians in power for the last 20 years have taken. But
may I comment, Robert, here?
But of course.
Thank you. I think that the problem is that those guys that we elect really have a legal and a fundamental obligation to listen to everybody, and they're just listening to the people that are teasing them with bits of money or plums, and that's really the opposite of their job. And they're supposed to use judgment. I mean, what do we need leaders for if they don't ever lead?
Yeah.
They're reacting in fear, so they pass laws because they're afraid to do anything else.
I mean, it's ironic if you read through these articles. The key issue is the city needs to be open to the public, says this business person, Ross, an executive director of the Bayside District. Open to the public? No. She wants it closed to certain kinds of people. She means exactly the opposite of what she says. They don't present any stats or figures from the police indicating real problems in terms of people not getting space. In fact, the only time the reporter went down there, she couldn't find any panhandlers that day. I mean, and this is the same kind of stuff you get when you go to the downtown commission, and even someone like Sheila Coonerty, who voted for the parking garages law and then voted against the expansion of it to the parking lot law, making it illegal to walk into a parking lot or garage unless you have a car there, closing off 10 square blocks of public space that had previously been open to the community. Antagonizing tourists. Her point was that where's the crime wave figures? Where's the indication the law has been successful for the last year? Where are the figures showing, you know, whether the crime has gone elsewhere or the crime is any worse in different places in town, or what kind of impact this has had? What are the real complaints about the behavior involved? You don't get this information from the police. They won't give it to you, and they wouldn't even give it to the downtown commission. They said, you've got to get authorization from the city council. And a remarkable display of arrogance by Zach Friend, the police department PR guy. As I said, I've talked to Bob Guzley, who was previously on the downtown commission. I talked to my old Tim Fitzmaurice, the mayor who I'm suing in court.
Antagonist?
Well, he's been an antagonist, too. He agreed, you know, there's no precedent that commissions have to get permission from the city council to get stats on the police. The police department in Santa Cruz is stonewalling on these issues. As, you know, the mood gets more and more, at least among politicians, supportive of the police department. And they don't have to justify these kinds of ordinances. They kind of state it as some kind of unnecessary to justify public wisdom.
Or lack of it.
Well, I think it is lack of it, but it's claimed to be wisdom, but it's not. You know,
and justifying, but it's all superficial and perhaps phony. They're always talking about, well, we don't like to see so much traffic, but the real reason is that they got 20 phone calls from two businesses in 3 days.
Well, I mean, that's what we need to know. I mean, if there's a particular group of people that has a particular objection to something, they may have a valid point, but we need the data to see what's really going on. I mean, Palo Alto put in a sit-lie law, which makes it illegal to sit or lie in a downtown area. And the reason that they did so in 1997, they claim, was because there was a trip-fall danger. But they couldn't give one instance of anywhere that had actually happened. And so it was obviously, at least to me, pretty spurious kind of stuff. They had to cook up some reason because Palo Alto likes to think of itself as a liberal community. And in fact, we're going to be talking about Palo Alto in several cases, one of Victor Frost and another Joseph Ciampi, maybe on Sunday when I come back on the longer Sunday show. That's just kind of a teaser and a taste of the Santa Monica situation we'll be discussing. I think I'm going to go back to some street interviews. But, Linda, do you have anything you wanted to add to any of this before we...
No, I'm just so heartbroken when I think about what our taxpayers buy and what our electeds pass off as responsibility and leadership. It's just sickening. It's like Santa Cruz is going to be ahead of the federal tier of government in instituting fascism formally at the rate they're going. There's a momentum to that end.
Well, It's interesting. I mean, and hopefully in some of the forums this can be brought up. And again, there's a protest brewing. We'll be out at the ACLU meeting trying to express a different point of view to ACLU members, encouraging them to actually get back to the original, at least that's what some of us want to do, is some of us hope the ACLU can remember its original origins, which had to do with fighting fascism, or the 1919 version of fascism. The ACLU was originally the National Civil Liberties Board way back when it was formed right after at the end of World War I by Roger Baldwin and others.
And they supported free speech.
Well, they were supporting free speech for communists and anarchists and other people who were being deported by the government in the wave of hysteria after the First World War.
We are in front of the New Leaf complex in the fenced-off area of the sidewalk. It's about 11 o'clock on July 8th, Tuesday morning. We're talking with
Robert Morgan.
And, Robert, you say that you've had some sneak thief in a uniform approached you and your son recently?
Yes, Nick Danger, Super Ranger, the only John Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
And he absconded with our gear. We're quite certain of it because he was seen doing so. And now we were told we have to go to Felton to gather it again. When he works here, why do I need to jump on a bus to gather my belongings to go to Felton?
When did this happen?
2 days ago.
And where did this happen?
Over off the bike path by China One off Water Street.
And what time of day?
It was we get out early. It was like after 8 in the morning he came by on his shift and gathered our goods and took off in the wind.
What exactly did he take?
My sleeping bag, my Olympic pack, and some personal items that are irreplaceable.
Did he leave any kind of a message, or was there any kind of a warning?
No.
And you say your son also lost some stuff?
Yeah, and my friend Tony also. My son Zachariah had a really nice gear, and he just took it. It's like
at the same time?
Yeah, he took all three of our gear, just blank. And we had it rolled up tightly and neat and everything. The grounds were clean.
Was it sort of, again, the area where this happened was on a path? Or?
It's on a bicycle path. It begins right there off water.
Were you blocking the bicycle path?
Not at all. We were appropriately off the path.
Were there booby traps or possibly unresolved landmines?
Nothing in that area.
Medical material and needles.
Not either. We used the public facilities when it all.
Obscene signs or something?
No gang signs, none of this. No.
Nothing like that?
No, not at all.
Candy, perhaps poisoned, awaiting Halloween for children.
Nothing in that direction.
Nothing like that.
No illegal drugs, nothing.
But how do you know it was Wallace? Maybe it had been Sergeant Barry, who works with Wallace, or maybe it was a random homeless person or a house.
John Wallace was there 2 days before and told us that we needed to relocate. And we said we'd make every effort to find a new camp, or else we would not sleep there at night, or our gear might remain there. He knew this, and he took it.
So you suspect because of that early warning, but otherwise you didn't have any other information?
Okay. No.
And now you say that you may be up in Felton. How did you learn this info?
Went to the police department impound, and we were told that his department was in Felton.
So you don't know that it's up there, but you know that if it's up there, it's in Felton.
Right.
And we've actually played this before on the radio. I thought we hadn't, but we have. And I haven't yet spoken to these folks again to hear what the follow-up is. I want to be fair to Ranger Wallace, critical as I am of his philosophy and practice in supervising the essentially illegal destruction of homeless camps in the Poganip and his harassment of people in the parks generally who are poor and homeless. I think it's important to be factual about this. Nobody saw him take that stuff, but I suspect because it was all gone, people they assumed that it was done by an official authority rather than by a random thief, because random thief might not take every single thing. But again, it's not really clear from that account what happened. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, Freak Radio. Here are a few interviews we actually haven't played, and I apologize to those of you who are meticulous listeners who have had to suffer through the same material again. It's actually as interesting even a second time, but here's some new stuff.
It's 5 after 12 on August 20th down here on Pacific Garden Mall in front of the Dell Williams. We're talking with
Jeremy
and
Kim Ken.
And
Spike.
Hey,
Seven.
And three of you are seated here. You're standing. You got a sign, Got Breakfast. And you have some critical commentary on the hospitality crowd, the downtown pests, or hosts, as they call themselves.
Oh, yeah. There's some snitches.
Now, what do you mean by that?
They called the cops on me for flying the sign, man.
And what were you doing? What kind of a sign were you flying?
Got Breakfast.
And what exactly were you doing? Were you hitting people over the head with it?
They said that I was aggressive panhandling because I was walking up to people asking them if they would help me get breakfast today.
Uh-huh. And what did the police say to you?
Nothing. They threatened to give us tickets, and they called the police, and they're like, if you move, we'll give you a chance this time.
I see.
And then they're like, we'll call off the cops. So they did. But they like to hassle us about everything.
It's actually illegal on Pacific Avenue to be within 14 feet of a building.
Yes.
And panhandle. So,
and change machine.
And 50 feet of a change making machine. So where did you move from?
That bench.
So you moved here. Anything? And you say you also have a concern with the hosts, and again, your name?
I've just been harassed by them. And
how so?
No, like, they've yelled at me one day. They just screamed at me for sitting on another street with my dogs, and they were, like, calling the cops on me, and then I was walking away, and they followed me for, like, four blocks. And just
these were two
harassed.
Particular hosts?
Yeah, the two hosts that he was talking about from today.
Who were they?
I don't know their names.
One lady with glasses, and then this short, older
really
man.
Really old, tiny guy.
Yeah,
man. These fucking guys, man, they don't even know, dude. We stay 14 feet away from the stores, and we're fucking, you know, chilling 3 feet away from each other. They just fucking harass us, man. They don't got nothing better to do.
Yeah,
fuck the fucking
They've just
police.
Been rude to me. Like, somebody said, like, you need to train these people better or something, and
yeah,
I'm not a dog, like, fuck saying that. Like, and he could just be nice, like, hey, could you guys move? But they just, like, yell and come up really aggressively and, like, just, I don't know. They're not very hospitable.
Yeah, not at all.
They shouldn't be called that.
The hostility crew, perhaps.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Now, how long have you two been here now?
Probably like 3 days.
So in 3 days you've acquired a bad attitude toward the hosts.
Yeah. We have. The hospitality guys, at least.
Where are you coming from and where are you going?
I came from Texas and I don't know where I'm going.
Oceanside? Don't know. I'm going to go home. I have to go back to Oceanside. I have some stuff to do there.
Anything positive to say about Santa Cruz?
I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
a lot of people, just the hospitality guys, need to go.
It's
or
beautiful,
start
yeah,
being hot, nice.
A lot of people are really nice.
And we've been talking with?
Devin.
And Jeremy.
And, of course, Spike. So it's about 12:30. We have three squad cars parked on Pacific Avenue, two next to each other, and one outside the Authentic Indian Restaurant. Sitar here on Pacific Avenue, kind of checking out what's going on. Officer Forbes is here in his shorts. Well, three folks are eating ice cream, and could be a routine police call. We'll see. All right, how are you? And Officer Forbes asks two bicyclists to walk rather than ride their bikes. And is also making his way over to Alfresco's New Leaf Market. Actually, it looks like over to the Borders area. And Officer Forbes directs people to get up off the planter boxes. Indeed, those are middle-class people in front of Borders, so one has to say he's acting in a non-discriminatory way, making people stand rather than sit on the concrete lip. It's across from Borders that the two squad cars are parked. So, looks like Officer Forbes is... Another officer standing near a man seated on a bench in front of rolls and cans. We'll see what that's all about as we approach. And these are folks with the... Oh, sorry.
We have a fourth squad car driving by. I guess, yeah, there's a squad car city around here. Here's a man on the bench who can give us an analysis. What have you observed?
I know everything, and yeah, they're definitely
two squad cars. Actually, that makes four, five squad cars downtown, two on the street, three parked.
Man, you know they're on the rampage. No, you know what? They pretty much respect you if you respect others, but sometimes, you know, you get caught up in the chaos of being homeless, and then, you know, it's all over. But anyways, they've been okay with me lately.
Well,
so.
I see they're stopping Sue down there. I'm going to go take a look and see what's happening. Actually, it's not Sue, but they're talking to some individual on the street. The individual we spoke to earlier with a panhandling sign. Two officers are involved. One who went to the group with the spike and the other folks.
Are you shitting me? My name's Kim, and I was walking with a sign, and I got a ticket for it. Oh, my gosh.
Officer Sims here is giving a citation, apparently, to a guy with a ticket that says, got breakfast. We spoke to him earlier.
W-A-R-H-U-R-S-T, William Adam Robert Henry, Union Driver San Tom. Yes.
William Adam Robert.
Henry Union Robert San Tom. I'm pretty sure that I'm 14 feet away from the eating establishments, man.
And indeed, he is 14 feet away, standing in front of Marini's, and the time is about 25 to 1. It's a little hard to hear with this truck starting up. And so let's go over here to see what Officer Forbus is doing. He's ticketing, apparently, somebody here. As this FedEx pulls out. Really hard to hear, so you have to count on my fine narration to cover it as the Corvus tickets these three empty individuals sitting on their backpacks. It looks like might not even be a ticket, might be a... Yeah, it's just an ID harassment stop. And similarly over here. We're back. Officer Sims is writing something.
A little bit shorter than you.
Across the way.
Like 145 or something. You know, I'm just going to, like, tear this up or something. But
it's all right.
I don't really. I don't fucking know.
Your ID number?
It's W-A-R-H-U-K-D something, 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 something.
What's the
Washington.
It looks like this could be, other than a citation, could be a simply harassment at ID stop, which people don't have to say anything when they're stopped like this. Police officers give the impression that they do, but of course they don't.
Dudes, I was walking with the sign.
Ask him if you're free to go.
Am I free to go?
Not yet.
Okay, so he is apparently being written a citation, or else the officer is illegally detaining him, one of the two. Ask him if you're free to go.
Yeah, am I free to go?
What are you recording? Okay, so apparently he's interrogating. Oh, I'm doing this for Top Watch, free radio.
Cool. You're in the radio.
So Officer Forbus, what? Yeah, Officer Forbus here is apparently claiming that he has a right to ask. He can ask questions. People don't have to answer them unless they want to, or unless they're under arrest.
Yeah, most people don't know that though.
You don't have to answer any questions unless you're under arrest. And that's not actually accurate either. You don't have to answer any questions at all. You can always say, I have nothing to say and I want to speak to an attorney. So let me not misspeak myself. This is the way police compile files on people who aren't criminals at all.
So they probably have like a big database, huh, all over the country?
Well, here at Santa Cruz anyway, they're doing this. I'm more concerned with what happens here.
Yeah, the Rangers took my ID this morning for sleeping in the park. That's probably
the name of the officer who did that. Do you remember? Short, stocky fellow?
He wasn't stocky, he was short. He was bald. He was fairly kind about it, but definitely woke us up.
He took your ID. They're not supposed to take your ID.
No. He took
your information.
Yeah, he recorded my information.
And did he give you a citation?
No, he said if now that we're in the registry, if we ever get caught again, we'll get a citation. It's like $190, I guess.
You were sleeping?
No. Well, I wasn't. I was reading my book. But
reading your book in a
under tree. I mean, I slept there the night before. So.
Did you tell him that?
I mean, I was with some friends who were asleep, so it was pretty.
What time of day was it?
Clear. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, at 8:30 it becomes legal to sleep in the park.
At 8:30,
right? Okay.
Didn't have all the.
See, I didn't know that.
The derelicts are hanging out.
So.
The alfresco, that little kiosk. They're just harassing me. I'm tired. Are they asking
for money? What are they doing? And a member of the public is concerned about folks in front of alfrescos.
What does accosting mean, really?
There's a panhandler who's sitting there who's saying, got any spare change?
So that's accosting somewhere.
Some people feel accosted more easily than others.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends. You know? I mean, accosting is, hey, man, you know,
yeah,
that's accosting. But, you know, you can accost someone in a variety of ways.
How long have you been doing this radio thing for?
Years. Too long.
Yeah. Is it? It's public radio, local public radio?
It's Free Radio Santa Cruz. So you're from, what's your name?
I'm Elliot Wilkinson Ray.
And Elliot, you're from Vermont?
Yeah, I'm from Richmond, Vermont, but I go to college at the University of Vermont in Burlington. So, and I'm an intern at City Hall for the Legacy Project, which is the Sustainability and Social Equity Division of the local.
You're not convicted, but an accused criminal for potentially sleeping in a park.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's a difficult place to get around cheaply out here because everything's very high priced, and I'm used to, you know, Vermont, where there's a lot of public open land where you can just kind of do your thing, so it's different for me.
And we'll have to return to that on Sunday morning, because it's now time for From the Cream to the Dregs, this time with an old hand who's sitting in for Uncle Dennis, who apparently is, I don't know where he's with the cream or with the dregs, but he's not in the studio, and I'm going to turn the mic over to... Is it Old Lady Scar Arms?
Hey,
I remember.
Awesome.
And I wanted to ask you again, please remember that on Saturday you can join the Human Rights Organization at 2 o'clock and meet at the Taqueria Vallarta at Cathcart and Pacific. And you can join us at the ACLU and...
60 seconds overtime, Robert.
Chat with them, even at the risk of being dragged out of the studio. I mean, at the risk of being dragged out of the ACLU meeting. And you can also, of course, come back, and this show will be with us again, my show, that is.
Just make sure you take that crappy old laptop when you leave and not this brand new
at 9:30 in the morning when I'll be coming back. Old Lady Scarms will be scarring your mind and your heart coming up next on Free Radio. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides.
Oh,
we've finally ejected Robert from the studio. Thank goodness. Wait, Robert, you left your coffee cup. Damn, he's always leaving some garbage in the studio. It sure is fun to talk shit about Robert Norris. And there's so much shit to talk. Anyway, that was some Esquivel. And I know you can probably tell right now that this is not going to be your typical From the Cream to the Dregs. The music of the 60s and 70s, it's going to be a completely different show tonight. I'm going to play whatever I feel like playing. If you hate it, call me and tell me. Maybe I'll change it. 427-3772. And you can also tell me if you like it, or if you have a request. 427-3772. My name's Old Lady Scararms. Again, filling in for Uncle D, who's helping his son up in Humboldt right now move back into college. So, anyway, he'll be back next week. We're going to hear a little bit more Esquivel while I get settled in here and clean up after good old RN. Just kidding, Robert. Have you had a spiritual experience? A sense you've lived before? Out-of-body or near-death experience? Dreams of a departed loved one, an inner light or inner sound? Discover what your experiences really mean. Connect with other like-minded people. Learn new and advanced ways for exploring your inner worlds. Attendees receive a free CD with special techniques for exploring dreams and soul travel. Attend a fascinating free, that means you don't pay any money, discussion for people of all faiths, Saturday, September 13th, 2 to 4 p.m. in the community room, 1955 41st Avenue, number A4. Presented by Kangar, Religion of the Light and Sound of God. Certainly would at least be interesting to see who attends one of these strange things. Anyway, you're listening to Esquivel here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. 101.1 FM, streaming online at freakradio.org. This show is called From the Cream to the Dregs. Uncle Dennis is out of town. He'll be back next Thursday. My name is Old Lady Scararms, and I am filling in for him. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, I'm not going to be sticking the music of 60s and 70s tonight. I'm going to be doing my own thing, playing some music that I'd get a kick out of. And if you like it, great. And if you don't, I hope you'll call me and suggest something different. 427-3772. Almost forgot the number. I haven't done a show in a couple of months. 427-3772 is the number in the studio. The ringer is on if you want to call in. Right now we're going to hear a little John Lee Hooker, and there's not a whole lot of drinking going on in the studio. Not, in fact, practically, well, none, unless you count the dregs of the bottles in the recycle bin, which I don't think I'm going to stoop that low tonight. We'll see. One bourbon, one scotch, one beer. John Lee Hooker.
Made me go out that night at that hour I'd normally been in bed, but I found myself looking up at the sky at a very bright light straight overhead. It flashed green and then red, Santa Claus color. I stood there frozen in that light, then I started hearing this kind of a whir. The lights got louder and the noise got brighter, and I felt a sudden chill. Brr. It's cold. Shouldn't have gone out without a coat. My mom was right again. This big old spaceship floated down and hovered 3 feet above the earth. Never been so scared in all my life. Could have given spontaneous birth if I was a woman and pregnant. From these two little guys about 4 feet tall jumped out of their space-age Greyhound bus. They grabbed me by the arms and said, "Start walking, Dan, you're coming with us." Abduction.